So I'd like for us to involve ourselves in a practice, and I'd like for us to do the practice first, and then I'd like to do some readings about the practice, and then we can do the practice again. But it relates very much to this phrase, the idea of the ornaments of action and manner and things that are good and beautiful. And the practice is called Kasab, or alternate nostril breathing. Some people refer to it as pranayama. But I want to emphasize to you, and I want to underscore it and say it in capital letters, that all the breath practices are given, and if done regularly, will help you build mastery. So if there's something in your life at any level where you feel you need support, a kind of masterful control, the breath practices are key, and that's why they're given as a daily part of your practice. So this breath, we've done a form of it because we did the triangle breath. We had done the triangle breath a number of months in a row. But this breath, we will breathe in through the right nostril, hold, then we'll breathe out through the right nostril, then in through the right nostril, hold, and out through the left nostril. The rhythmic pattern that I've always assigned and I was given was in 4, hold 8, out 4. It can be done in shorter increments if one has problems with the breath or retention of the breath, but this, I think we can all manage this. If you do have a problem, just shorten the count for yourself and do it at your own rhythm. So let's all start with an exhalation. 1, 2, 3, 4. In through the left. Hold. Outright. In right. Hold. Out left. In left, hold, out right, in right. Hold. Out left. In left. Hold. Out right. In right. Hold. Out left. in that. Hold. Outright. In right. Hold. Out loud. Now, we're going to breathe in both nostrils and out both nostrils. Breathe in. Hold. Out. 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 In. Hold. Just tune in to yourself. Feel your body. Feel or observe your thoughts. Emotions. Essence. You imagined at the beginning of the class having that coconut, cracking it. Imagine it now. Does it seem like it might be a little easier to crack open?
Soft, malleable, white, oh. Pure flesh, baby coconut.
Isn't it wonderful? Yeah, it is. It's really pure wonderful. Innocence. We can really transform through these practices. And to do them daily and regularly, how fortunate we are to have them. I'd like to read a little bit here because I think it's wonderful to experience things. And of course, my own Murshida never let me know the meaning of any of the wazifas or the practices. That was mine to discover. I wouldn't dare have thought, tell me what that means. What does it mean? Why am I doing it? I don't know why. No one ever told me not to do it, except for I knew not to do it. And you know what? Thank God. Because I discovered within my own being what those practices meant. As part of our esoteric training when I was in the Sufi order, we did practices in couples. I maybe have told you this, but we would have to sit before someone and they would be given silently a wazifa, a sacred name to recite. And we sat before them and just by tuning and feeling them, And you know, there are 99 names of God that are given as Wazifa practices. We had to be able to say what that was. That's training. That's not going to a book and finding out the meaning. That's knowing the meaning through one's own practice, what vibration gets set up in oneself, and then emptying enough when you're sitting before another person to feel what the vibration is that's radiating from them. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine light and life, tuning to those vibrations. Tuning. It's a matter of tuning. It sounds extraordinary. There's nothing about it, but one studies, one can understand these things. So I'm reading just a little bit here, and I want to read little pieces because they're beautiful teachings. Are there any questions at this point?
Yeah, I'm worrying about how to understand the meaning of this mudra, how many times I have to do it every day. It's part of the Gayatri 24.
I have no idea.
Okay. I guess it's probably flicking the evil away so we're flowing like a soft baby coconut.
I don't know. I don't know what that means. But I also know that you know, it's. I remember someone hearing someone say, "Well, you know, it's. You kind of don't let people you don't know sit on your bed or sleep on your bed because of the vibration." Well, you know what? When the whole world is your bed,
divine, you are inside and out.
How are you going to choose who's going to walk on your bed or be on your bed? It's just a matter of perspective. The other thing is this idea of evil. You know. There's no doubt that there are these contrary vibrations. No doubt about it, because that's how we perceive everything, light and shadow. But again, there is a way. Well, you know, it's not for everybody. It's not a practice I would give to everybody, but it is the practice that my Buddhist teacher gave me. So I'll share that if you're interested.
Please.
He said to me, this is almost now 20 years ago, and to never leave the practice for a day. Take all the misery and suffering of the world into yourself and offer back in return love, compassion, and light. Now, you know, we spend a lot of time, we're showing this mudra like this, I'm showing it for the video, that we're flicking off evil. Well, that's a complete contrary thing to taking all that misery in and radiating something,
right.
Transforming it.
I was wrong. Probably it means to be flexible and flowing and soft.
Isn't that a wonderful way of thinking of it? Because the minute, you know, I think about Jesus saying,
say no.
Resist not evil. Resist not evil. What does that mean? Well, maybe it does mean we take that into ourselves. And we transform. And spiritual warriorship is in a way. You know what I'm saying? The knights. Knightesses. What would we be? What would women be? They're not. I guess they can be knights too, can't they? Maybe an androgynous term. But the point is that not everyone can do that. I think that I'm not special, just for whatever reason. Maybe he thought my heart needed to be softened. I can't say. But that was the first and kind of last practice. I mean, I have other special meditational deities. We don't need to talk about that, but that's, you know, another subject. But I think that's a really interesting practice because that goes contrary to everything in our being that wants to protect ourselves.
Well, that's the hard shell of the coconut, too.
Yeah.
Is the desire to
protect.
It's our protection.
That's right. That's right. And there are some times where, you know, well, you just have to get out of the road and not be run over by the Mack truck, you know. And sometimes you have to show another face. You know, sometimes that angry face is the thing that helps someone make that right choice or, you know, keeps us safe. It's a practice. And then how does one apply that in life also is another thought. So anyway, I don't need to talk more about it. But I just wanted to kind of introduce that in vibrationally into this. Yes?
Alina, would you like to turn on your microphone and ask your question?
Yes.
Yes.
I would like to ask a question about the kasha.
Yes.
When you are practicing the kasha, do you follow the breath or do you concentrate on a spot, a certain spot in? For example, your third eye, or
the practice can be given in a number of different ways.
Okay.
Yeah, and sometimes it's given with different concentrations, and sometimes with different wazifa. It's that is one way, is to concentrate on the third eye.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And maybe this will all be further highlighted through this next segment. So this is from a teaching from the Collective Interviews, the 30th of August, 1926, by Hazrat Inayat Khan. And again, I always like to remind people that this was in August of 1926, and Murshid left his earthly body on February 5th, 1927. So this is very close to the time of his passing. Breath is the most important part of our life. In other words, breath is our very life. The one who is ignorant of its nature is ignorant of life. The one who is ignorant of its nature is ignorant of life. The one who is led by the breath is the slave of breath and life. The one who controls breath is the master of life. Hence what I said, that these develop mastery, the breath practices develop mastery. The words, in quotes, led by breath, means that it is the breath, its speed and its change into different elements and into different directions, which conducts all of the affairs of man's life. Man, ignorant of this fact, is led by the breath and experiences conditions in life as they happen to come. And therefore life becomes not his kingdom, but a prison. When man becomes aware of this truth, he wishes to gain control of his thoughts, feelings, emotions, passions, and of his affairs. Such a man, by the help of Murshid, learns and practices the control of the breath, which is called Kasab. This practice develops in time the volume of the breath, purifies it, and makes it rhythmic and powerful. This practice should not be exaggerated, nor should it be repeated more often than prescribed by the Murshid. Kasab first purifies all the breathing tubes of the body, which in time helps to purify every vein, even every nerve of the body. Here again, he's referring to those more subtle realms of healing. If you have some experience in Eastern healing, either to yourself or your study, or through, they have these beautiful drawings and charts in Eastern modalities of healing that you can see. So here he's talking about that. Disease such as tuberculosis and all lung diseases in their beginning are cured by it, by this breath. And a person who keeps up this practice all his life will always keep from consumption. One can avoid many diseases and the effects of contagious diseases by a regular practice of kasal. So there it's at the physical level that it's a benefit. And I have a few more things that I would like to share. So that's one of the layers of the ego, the physical. But the breath is much more than that. And there's more. I'd like to read from just a few small passages from the book titled Universal Sufism, The Path of Breath, Prayer, and Zikr. There are two particular forces in rhythm, which in music are called strong and weak accents. I'm pointing to my nostrils, my left and right nostrils, for those who can't see me. Suppose that we push a pendulum of a clock with a finger. The first swing it will make will be strong. The next turn it will make will be a reaction of the first force, which will naturally be milder in force. So it is with the breath. The breath which flows through the right nostril is jalal. It represents strength. The breath that flows through the left nostril is called jamal, which is milder. Breath being the very life, and its influence being not only on our mind, but on our life's affairs. Not only on our mind, but our life's affairs. The jalal and jamal counts greatly in our life's affairs. And when the rhythm is broken, meaning upset, the jalal and jamal come into conflict with one another. That's from the Gitas, Gita 1.7 on mysticism. And these, except for in these little excerpts in these books, are not really published papers. They're given as one progresses along the path. Here's a little bit more. That was Gita 1.7. This is 1.8. Again, on mysticism relating to jalal. Jalal. The jalal aspect shows the strength and power of nature. We find jalal power flowing through the right nostril and breath, working through the right hand, giving it an inclination to move first, through the right foot, giving it an inclination to step first. In the senses, that which shows is jalal. That which sees is jamal. That which speaks is jalal. That which hears is jamal. The active, receptive, active, receptive. The same thing we find in our thought. The thought which rises up itself in the mind is jalal thought. The thought which is caused by some other source is a jamal thought. So something that arises is jalal. Something that comes from another force is jamal. It responds. It's responding to something else. A very beautiful teaching that we have here. And how many really study it? I think all of you have been given the practice. Now think about it in a different way. Why? What is it doing for you? Every person has either a Jalal temperament or a Jamal temperament. A person with temper is Jalal, fire. With courage is Jalal. With power, with strength is Jalal. Jalal, this right channel. So when we're breathing in this channel, what are we breathing in? Just read it here.
Courage.
Strength. Power. But it has to be balanced, right? Because if we're just like that, well, we'll be pretty tired pretty soon. So mm-hmm. we need to also draw. And we know in the triangle breath, this is the area from willpower, the Jalal. But then we also have to draw from this other side. Do you remember what it is from long ago? What's that other, the Jamal? What does it represent?
Inspiration.
Inspiration, that's right. Anything else?
Receptivity.
Yeah. I'll give you a whole list here. I'm reading from Murshid, by the way, so I'm giving nothing, just being the vehicle. So, a person with kindness, with tolerance, with forgiveness, with meekness, with mildness, with modesty, humility, is of the Jamal temperament. Then through the day and night, man changes his condition from Jalal to Jamal, and Jamal to Jalal, either owing to the influence of his breath, or controlled by the breath of another, or a situation makes him be in a Jalal or a Jamal state. Or his own thought, his own speech, his own action. Among Sufis, there are two kinds of adepts, the Jalali and the Jamali, and each has his own line of progress and action. Jamal. I'd like to highlight this just a bit further, and then I'd like for us to conclude with the practice again. And I would really encourage you to go back and do this practice every day, very concentrated. Go back to this teaching online. Listen to it again. Take the directions and bring that realization into the practice. This is from the Sufi Message, Volume Number 9, on the Unity of Religious Ideals, where Murshid gives the teachings on the Master, the Saint, and the Prophet. Now see how this maps onto those qualities in the breath. There are three roads in spiritual attainment. So we have this Jamal, we have Jalal, we have Kamal, which is the state of perfection, the perfect balance of the two. Okay? And often, though, it's the clashing of those two, which may bring a kind of, one could say, a kind of an interruption or destruction, and then that state is come into that perfected state. So there are three roads to spiritual attainment, which meet in the end at one junction. Okay. One road is that of the Master. Another comes from a different point of view and is the road of the Saint. And the middle path between the two is that of the Prophet. The path of the Master is the path of war. But listen to this. What does that mean? War with those outer influences which prevent one from making one's way through life. The path of the Master is self-discipline. Not trying to discipline the whole world. Not trying to control everyone else. It's self-discipline. And willpower to make headway through life. He, she conquers himself, herself, He battles with life. He is at war with destiny. He crusades against all that seems to him wrong. He finds the key to the secrets unknown to him. He turns all conditions, all things, all people into the shape that he wishes and molds as he likes the personalities that come in touch with him. He tunes personalities to the tone which will best suit them and the whole orchestration. The Master's one desire is spiritual attainment at its fullest. Therefore, to him, and what I want to say here, this could be very misinterpreted, but if you think about it, if you've come into a beautiful sacred space or before someone that you dearly respect, you know that sometimes there are no questions in that moment. There's only this eternal knowing that sort of emerges from our being. And that's what it means about that he molds the personalities that can best suit, you know, themselves in the orchestration. It's like tuning that person, not for his own purpose or her own purpose, but for their purpose. It's different. It's not about controlling anyone here. It's almost like, and again, I make the analogy to Eastern music, if anyone's familiar with, it can even happen on a guitar. But, you know, if you, like on a tambura, which has such a beautiful resonant vibration, if you pluck one string, all the other strings start to vibrate. It's that way. The Master is so finely tuned that it just, the presence of that being tunes other people. Or might even make them painfully aware of where they're out of tune. That's also a benefit. So the Master's one desire is spiritual attainment at its fullest. Therefore, to him, all other attainments, spiritual or material, are nothing but many steps on a staircase. The struggle on the path of the Master is great. He has to struggle all the way. Every condition that he has to face on the way to accomplishment is harder to cope with than the one before. No doubt, as he advances on the path of attainment, he gains power through struggle. The greater the struggle through life, the greater his power. You know, sometimes I think about it. When the worst thing that's ever happened to me in my life has already happened, what can harm me? There's nothing to fear but fear itself. The path of the saint is one of love, harmony, and beauty. Does that sound familiar? Love, harmony, and beauty. Ready to give, ready to sacrifice, ready to renounce, ready to give in and to yield. The saintly soul accepts all insults as a purifying process. The saintly soul accepts all insults as a purifying process. The saintly soul accepts all insults as a purifying process. He resigns to every loss, for there is no loss without some gain, and there's no gain with which there is not a loss. There's always a hidden loss in the gain, and a gain in the loss. Renunciation is not difficult for that soul, for in renunciation it finds freedom. No sacrifice is too great for the saintly soul, for it gives it happiness. It need not learn generosity, for this is its nature, its character. Modesty, humility, tolerance, and forgiveness are part of the saint's being. He cannot do otherwise, for he knows no other way. Renunciation is not difficult for that soul, for in renunciation it finds freedom. But let me tell you, first you have to have something to renounce. find a lot of people put themselves on the path of a renunciation. Really, in truth, it's the path of laziness. It's only when you really have something to give up and you give it up is it renunciation. Okay. The last. The way of the prophet is more balanced. For the life of the prophet, there is a balance of these two attributes, the power of attainment and patience to be resigned to the will of God. So the prophet is at the same time both a warrior and a peacemaker. This way is kamal, that is, perfect or balanced. So again, jamal, jalal, kamal. The work of the prophet is not only in his own spiritual attainment, but he has a service of great importance to function. As the prophet goes through the five stages on his way towards the fulfillment of his life's mission, he acts as a warner, a healer, a reformer, a lawyer, a teacher, a priest, and a preacher. Such service keeps the prophet away from what his soul always craves for. And that is the solitude of the wilderness. He longs for one place, and he's put in another place. The very soul who constantly yearns to flee from the crowd because of his mission is put in the very midst of the crowd. Thus the work of the prophet in the world becomes as hard as if a person were asked to jump into the water and then come out dry. He must live in the world and not be of the world. However, it is very often the prophetic soul whose life mission is to serve humanity in time of need, and it is the fulfillment of this service which makes Rasul the messenger. So you probably recognized for yourself in some way that you have an inclination towards one of these temperaments, one of these paths. And God willing, you can realize that and gain mastery of that in this life. And also know that you are not slave to it, that through mastery of the breath you can change conditions, you can change yourself. And so we'll do this practice one more time of Kasa, and we'll do this with this concentration, and one should continue in their daily practice with this concentration. As one breathes in from the left nostril, consider that you're breathing everything in that is beautiful, that is caring, that is generous, that's loving, that's kind. And as you hold, you allow that vibration to permeate your being. And when you breathe out the right, you offer that to the world. And then when you breathe in through the right, you breathe in power and strength and courage and the principle of activity. And then you offer it to this side. You offer this power in support of this gentle, meek, kind, inspired part of your being. And then that inspired part of the being rushes back to meet up with that powerful, active part of your being. And you go back and forth in this way, like a wave rising, and then it falls and recedes. and rises and falls and recedes. Then the completion of the practice is breathing in both nostrils, bringing absolute and perfect unity and balance. And breathing it out. Breathing in. And what does that do? Go back to this beautiful phrase that Mership gave us. It's the culmination of this series we've reached. Gatha 1, level 10. We'll begin a new cycle. But this was his final words on this teaching. As man has the inclination... No. The first lesson that the ego must learn in order to develop into the humane state is that of pride in the form of self-respect. And it goes on to say, as man has the inclination to have good clothes and good manners in order to appear in the eyes of others as what he considers beautiful, so he must feel the same inclination towards building of personality by the ornament of action and manner in the way that he considers good and beautiful. There you have it. Action, jamal, beauty. Action, jalal, beauty, jamal. Manners, jamal. Action, wisdom, power, jalal. You see? Okay. All right. So we'll breathe out. 2, 3, 4. In through the left. Hold. Out through the right. In right. Hold. Out left. In left. Hold. Out front. In right. Hold. Out left. In left, hold, out right, in right, hold. Out left. In left. Hold. Out right. In right. Hold. Out left. In left. Beauty. Manner. Hold. Perfection. breathe in light, power, strength, courage, might, masterfulness. And we hold, bringing it into equipoise. And we breathe out, offering this courage and this strength, this might to beauty, to gentleness, to humility, upholding these qualities. And now we breathe in both nostrils, the perfect union and balance, Jamal, Jalal, and Kamal. And we breathe out. And we breathe in the union of these principles. And we hold. And we breathe out, every particle of our beings infused with this consciousness, and we offer and radiate that vibration. And we breathe in perfect equilibrium, balance, composure, equanimity. And then we offer. In, hold, out, Rashida.
Is there any certain number of total repetitions?
Yes, you do. The repetition is one cycle is in left, hold, out right, in right, hold, out left. That's a cycle of one.
Mm-hmm.
You do that 5 times. Then you breathe in both nostrils, hold, and out 5 times. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
Ask, are there other questions? That's a good question. Did that help to illuminate that practice for people that are doing it?
Good.
Just a brief reading from, is there someone that asked a question?
It's not a question, but Nirvatifa said very, very much.
Oh, I'm happy about that. Thank you, Nirvatifa. I know you've been working with that practice many years, so I'm happy that something else was offered here for you.
Should we do this before dawn?
It's always good to do the practices as the sun's rising.
Okay.
but not necessary. If you wake up a little late or it's not yet light, or it's best to do them just anyway, whenever. But yeah, Murshid always talks about that. I was going to read that, but I think our time's limited now, about the idea of the Uruj, the rising, and the Nazul, the falling. But that is so beautiful, you know, when he gives us those prescribed times to pray at 5:55. Of course, daylight savings time messes everything up, but, you know, one can understand that what he was intending to tell us was to say the prayers at sunrise and then to say the prayers at noon when things are at their zenith. You know, I think about the prayer and the affirmation of the prayer that we say in the morning, pour upon us thy love and thy light, pour upon us thy love and thy light, you know, as the sun's rising. And then at noon, may the message of God reach far and wide, when the sun's at its zenith and has its greatest radiance, you know, wherever we are in the world. And then in the sunset prayers, which again he gives 5:55 in the evening, is disclose to us thy divine light. So it's interesting that those phrases are very pertinent to those times of day and sort of the influence, the planetary influence, one might say, especially the solar influence or lunar influence, whichever the case may be. So one reading, this is again from the Reflections on the Art of Personality, number 79. Resignation of the self is the path of love and wisdom. Love, Jamal, and wisdom, Jalal. You see, always these principles. Feeling great happiness in offering to others without expectation of anything in return. Feeling great happiness in offering to others without expecting anything in return. However, resignation cannot be a virtue if it is offered out of weakness or defeat, but only if it is the result of mastery over the self. Resignation cannot be a virtue if it is offered out of weakness or defeat, but only if it is the result of mastery over the self. So again, it highlights this important idea of mastery, developing mastery through these practices. Push that button. Okay. And on the other one. So again, this beautiful quote highlights this whole teaching and the idea of what is true renunciation, what is true transformation of our being. We can do that only through not a defeat, but through mastery, through offering oneself on the rock of truth, taking our coconut. Murshid Hidayat likes using that word about coconut, trying to get it through the coconut. He uses that term a lot. But, you know, how do we overcome the limitations and the obstacles in ourselves, in the world? It's through mastery. The breath helps us with that. The teachings help us with that. Being silent and still helps us with that. Yes.
It's a question from Alima Welsh. I don't understand what resignation means.
There's a haiku that maybe helps to highlight it. The grasses fall, they lay as they fall. So it's this idea of kind of a grateful acceptance, one might say. It's like the grass is falling and they lay as they fall. They don't get up and try to rearrange themselves into some pretty pattern. It's just everything is as it is. Resignation of the self is the path of love and wisdom, feeling great happiness in offering to others without expecting anything in return. One can maybe also even use the word here, renunciation. In a sense, I think that's what's implied. However, resignation, we could here say here, renunciation, cannot be a virtue if it's offered out of weakness or defeat. Again, as I said earlier, you have to be something or someone before you become no one or nothing. You understand? You have to build it first. And then you have to tear it down. Then there's really something you're giving up.
Milarepa?
It's the total story of Milarepa. Having to build the temple, tear it down, build the temple, tear it down.
Thank you.
Is it helpful, Alima? Do you understand now better?
Yes.
You're so welcome. Thank you for the question. Well, I hope it's been a benefit. I appreciate so much the opportunity to prepare and study myself in preparation for these classes, and I'm always very grateful for your interest and enthusiasm to come here and be a part of this and to continue your studies through the month until we meet again. And I do ask if there's anything here that's been of merit or benefit, that it benefit all beings, past, present, and future. I also wish to offer to all of you the opportunity, both here and there, on our remote visitors, the opportunity to practice generosity. Marcia talked about that as being a Jamal quality, being generous in offering something. So if the teachings are supporting you in some way, think about all the things that it takes to make these available to you, and think of offering your support in that way, not to any one person, but to the teachings and the vehicle of the teachings itself. And we have some opportunities here with our basket, and we offer our digital basket too, where people can write to us and offer something, and also there's a way to do that online. So I invoke your generosity. I'd like to remind those of you that are here before we meet again, we'll be having our Jomsa Sokpa party, and you may want to send the link for people to know what Jomsa Sokpa is, the Tibetan American Friendship Society. We'll have our holiday party the weekend after our American Thanksgiving, so it's on the 4th and 5th. You'll probably get a card, maybe we even got them today in the mail. We know they've been sent, and I have some here. And so that's to help our friends that are living in refugee camps, Tibetans that have gone into exile, one of our projects. O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, Open our hearts, that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. Amen.